Welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We're going to keep our Shocker baseball roll going after having Brian Elkers and Dave Lucas the last couple weeks. They were from the 1982 College World Series team. Today, we're going to switch our focus to the Wichita State Pizza Hut Shocker Sports Hall of Fame, which is coming up induction ceremonies this weekend. We have Brent Chemnitz with us. Brent is an assistant athletic director for outreach and staff development at Wichita State. This weekend, he's going to be honored for his work as pitching coach for the Shocker baseball team. Started in the 1979 season as a graduate assistant all the way to 2016. The Shockers made 7 College World Series appearances during that time. They won the 1989 title. The 1982 and 1991 teams led the NCAA in earned run average. Brent coached 9 first-round draft picks, including NCAA Pitcher of the Year Brian Elkers in 1982 and Darren Dreifert, the Golden Spikes Award winner in 1993. So, Brent, let's give people the origin story a little bit. Why did Gene Stephenson's detailed letter to you in response to a letter you wrote him in December of 1977, why did that play such an important role in getting you to Wichita State?
Well, you know, I'm like so many guys. When I was in college, my dream was to keep playing baseball. You know, I'd go to college, wanted to play pro ball. The dream was playing the big leagues like every little kid starting out on a sand lot. Well, it became obvious I had a nice career, a good career. But my senior year, it was like, okay, I better jump into reality here. The pro thing's probably not going to happen. Certainly not at the big league level. So I started looking for places to go to grad school so I could stay in coaching, hopefully, and get my master's degree, which would serve me well regardless. So I wrote Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Arkansas. And my college coach, you know, I told him what I was doing. He said, that's great. He said, but I would add Wichita State to your list, because if they hired Gene Stephenson, they must be serious. So I wrote him a handwritten note and got a response back that was more than your token stock letter. It was detailed. It was great attention to detail. And it really fired me up. So that was the initiation of me coming up, talking to Gene, and ending up at Wichita State.
So if you don't become pitching coach at Wichita State, what was the most likely career path you might have taken?
Well, I at that point, I really wanted to coach because I love sports. Didn't want to get out into the real world, so to speak. A lot of my buddies couldn't wait to get their degree and go take jobs. Or I wanted to stay in school where I could hopefully maybe continue to be at the college level, but for sure get a master's degree and get into coaching. Because if you had a master's and stayed in coaching, it was going to be more money. Not a ton more money, but a master's degree served you well. So I came up here, got my master's in PE with the emphasis in sports administration, but also got a history background and a driver's education background. So I thought, okay, if this baseball thing doesn't work, maybe a high school basketball coach. But I also was picking up my little teaching fields, which would make me more attractive, but primarily basketball and maybe baseball at the high school level. But my dream was to stay at the college level, and it happened.
We should probably give people the background to fill in some of the gaps. You're from Perry, Oklahoma, went to Phillips, which is at that time was an NAIA school in Enid, Oklahoma, very good baseball program. So it's, you didn't come up through, you know, an Oklahoma or a Texas. How did coming up through a small college, how do you think that shaped where you got and how you became a coach?
Well, Gene's heard me tell this story many times. I was a big Oklahoma Sooners fan growing up, lived and died OU football, followed Oklahoma baseball, and Gene was the assistant there the years they were going to Omaha. So my dream was OU. Wanted to play baseball at OU and talked to Oklahoma State a little bit. Never talked to OU, but ended up going to a small school, like you said, Phillips University in Enid. Great baseball school. In those days, not a lot of Division I's were taking it serious. I mean, you had the Texas, and you had Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, Arkansas. Oral Roberts was starting a program. Tulsa had been good, but as a whole, not as many. So at Phillips University, we beat a lot of Division I schools. So it was a great baseball situation for me. But, you know, my dream was OU. So I asked Gene when I got up here, I said, you know, my dream was to go there. What's, you know, what's going on? Gene being Gene, you weren't good enough, which he's right. That's 100% true. So I go to my best opportunity, Phillips, and had a great career.
Because
I had a blast.
Because Gene was assistant at OU. When
Yes, he was a recruiting guy. So I go to Phillips University, have a nice career. And like I say, Gene was one of the schools I wrote and got a great response back.
Uniform number 24, that's what you wore at Wichita State. Is there a history, backstory with that uniform number?
Well, my first year I was number 8. You know, you get what's available. So I was number 8. And in college, I actually had a single digit too. I think it was 6. But as a coach or whatever, I always thought, okay, you need a double digit number. So 24 became available, and it's really a Willie Mays deal. In the 60s, you know, I was Yankees early, but then my grandpa, for whatever reason, he got me onto Willie Mays, and he became my, even though he's a position guy, he became my go-to and my idol, so to speak. And as you know, Willie wore 22, so that's probably the biggest reason.
Good reason. So you arrive in Wichita as a GA, fall of 78. You got the program. It's about 1 year old under Gene. We all know, you know, there's no stadium, no locker rooms, no indoor practice place, players dressing in their car. When did you believe that there was, hey, we can do something pretty substantial here?
Well, before I ever got here. So I could say when I was writing these schools, and my coach Joe Record, who was an NAIA Hall of Fame guy, well-respected, he said, write Wichita State, add them to the list. And I was well aware of Gene. So I was kind of like my coach when they hired him. It's like, okay. Well, then after talking to him, Gene did not lack confidence. Nothing was going to get in his way. So when I came up here, there was never a feeling that we weren't going to get it done. It was, this is going to happen regardless. And we all fed off Gene. I'll give him 100% credit on that. But it was just one of those deals. We're going to have some obstacles maybe, but it's going to happen.
So his name, his work, his recognition from being at the University of Oklahoma then was pretty important, not just to you, but to other people in the area. This meant Wichita State was serious about baseball.
Yes, because anybody that was paying any attention to college baseball knew Oklahoma, Eaton Seymour, amazing coach. Gene worked for him. So people in the baseball circles, and it's not as publicized back then as it is now, but everybody knew who Gene was. Everybody knew that he was very successful, and he had been an All-American at Missouri, great athlete at Guthrie High School. So people knew him. And I think maybe the most important thing is pro scouts. He had a great rapport with pro scouts, and that helped him. Led him to players, and then I think they helped him and us once I got up here put out a good word and say, hey, if you want to go, you want to get better, you want to go to a good program, you need to look at Wichita State.
So Wichita State goes to the NCAAs for the first time in 1980, goes back in 1981, and then 1982, the big breakthrough, go to the College World Series, finish second. That's the team that was honored last weekend at the First Pitch Banquet. How do you describe the legacy of that 1982 team?
Well, I think they put us on the map. And that was well documented this weekend, as it should have been. Like you said, in 80, we went for the first time, lost 2 straight at Oral Roberts, went to Clemson in 81, 1-2. And then 82, there was kind of a turnover. We lost a lot of the first recruiting class. Joe Carter was a junior that signed, lost a couple really good pitchers. But we were fortunate that some of the seniors, or guys that could be seniors, didn't sign. Charlie O'Brien, Phil Stevenson, Jimmy Thomas, Don Heinkel. We had some good pickups, namely Dave Lucas. So the 82 team, it was kind of a crossroads. I think a lot of people said, okay, let's see what happens. Because, you know, some of those first recruits had graduated. Well, that team came together, got off to a slow start, 4-6, went and played at Texas, at Arizona State, got humbled, but man, did we go on a roll. And you could just see that team grow. You could see that team gain confidence. As a pitching coach, I mean, we ended up having 3 All-Americans, 2 that are first-round drafts, 2 that play in the big leagues, give up one run at the regional New Orleans, go to Omaha, and we did not lack confidence. We didn't go there like, hey, we're happy to be here. We went there with, hey, we're going to win this thing. Came up a little bit short, but that team definitely put us on the national map and made people realize, okay, Wichita State, they're for real.
The best story I heard while kind of researching the 82 team and talking to guys about the 82 team was Phil Stevenson getting hit in the jaw by an errant throw during the NBC World Series that ended his talks with the Expos, Phil said. So that meant he was for sure coming back to Wichita State. And then I heard it was Jim Thomas that threw the ball. Was that story discussed this weekend?
Oh, yes. And I totally forgot about that story. Because, you know, you go through the summer, and in those days, guys could sign all the way up to the first day of class. So you're always uneasy. Because what happens a lot of time, if one signs, and another one maybe signs, and then you may lose them all. But if there's solidarity, and it's like, no, let's all go back and make an impact, that can happen. Well, I totally had forgot the Phil story, but that was, and then JT being the one that hit him made it more entertaining. But Lauren Hibbs brought this up, and I totally forgot. That was a strike year in 81, so people weren't as aggressive signing guys as they maybe would have been. So it all played in our favor and got them all back, which obviously was huge.
Phil Stevenson, first baseman, just a great, great season, maybe the best offensive season in the history of college baseball. Jim Thomas was the second baseman on that team and also had a great season, great career, is in the Hall of Fame, and then later was an assistant coach at Wichita State. The final thing that was interesting to think about when they were talking about those four people coming back is that several of them were in Alaska. Heinkel was in Alaska, Stevenson was in Alaska, JT was in Alaska, and then they would say, yeah, so it was hard to get a hold of us. And in today's world, you don't think about that. But you think in summer of 1981, if you were in Alaska, you know, it was going to be hard for the major league team to get in touch and track you down. So that was another slice of life from the 1980s about that team. Describe a typical recruiting trip in the 1980s. What was it like then?
Well, the recruiting the way it was then is the way I loved doing it all the way through. You go see somebody in a game. Okay, it's an American Legion game, or in the spring, it's a high school game. Those were tougher because it was the same time as our season. But in the summer, you spend virtually every night at a ballpark. But it was a game that mattered. You'd go watch a kid play, and it was a big rivalry, and you could see the makeup. You could see how they react in different situations. Those were a blast for me. That never got old. So in the 80s, you get in your car, you fill it up, you grab some snacks for the road, you drive to wherever, and you watch a game. And then you drive back that night, you may get in at midnight, 1:30, whatever the case may be, you turn around and go somewhere else. I absolutely love that, never got tired of it. The thing in later years that became more prevalent is the showcases and the area code tryouts, and they do have value, but they can fool you because it's mass numbers. People are looking at size, velocity, things like that, which can be important. But in the 80s, there wasn't a lot of that. It was going to watch guys play in legitimate games. And like I say, I absolutely love that.
Do you have a favorite small town baseball stadium that you always enjoyed going to on a June night?
100% Enid. Okay, I went to college in Enid, Phillips University, and the old Phillips Failing Park was just a great feel. Great, great tucked-in atmosphere there on the campus. But in later years, they built David Allen Coe Park in downtown Enid. One of my good friends, Bill Mayberry, was instrumental in getting that built. So if people love any kind of baseball or history or culture, go to that field in Enid. It's got a little train that goes by out in the outfield. It's in downtown Enid, but that would be my favorite.
Let's see. Brandon Baird was from Enid.
Brandon Baird was from Enid, yes.
Blake Hurlbut.
Tyler okay. Fleming, Tobin Matejczyk, Jim Hepburn in the 80s. But I always used to look for reasons to go to Enid. But the other thing is they'd have tournaments down there, so you could go down there and see people from other schools as well.
So the famous 1982 rotation, Brian Elkers, Eric Sonberg, Don Heinkel, each of them earned All-American honors. All three were drafted. Elkers and Sonberg went in the first round. How much did their success help the program's credibility?
Well, I don't know if you can put a price on it. It was well documented this weekend. I don't know if there's a better rotation ever. It's the best we've had at Wichita State, but I don't think you could have one that's better anywhere. All three were All-Americans that year. It played out because we made it to the finals of the College World Series. Two were first-round drafts, Elkers and Somburg. Two pitched in the big leagues. We led the nation in ERA. We go to the regional, New Orleans, give up one run, and Charlie O'Brien was the catcher. And I said this weekend at the first pitch banquet, and I've said this many times, he's the best receiver ever, any level, middle school, high school, college, minor leagues, big leagues, and I believe that. He caught 13 Cy Young Award winners in the big leagues. So that definitely put a stamp on the program. And for me as a pitching coach, I mean, we pointed to that year many times in recruiting.
So if you're a former Shocker pitcher listening to this, you will be well acquainted with the Brain. And the Brain is Brent's 13 pages of yellow legal pad paper, all kinds of tips and things, the history of Wichita State pitching in a lot of ways. But give us the origin story of the Brain and what kind of shape is it in all these years later?
Well, it's battered. It's in bad shape. I've actually laminated the pages. I still have the original. It's right here. But I also have laminated copies so I don't lose it. And I don't give that thing away. People say, hey, can I get a copy of the Brain? I'm going, no chance. And people have said, hey, you should turn that into a book. Well, that takes away what it means to me. It's all about symbolism. Well, it started in 88, which makes that a great story, as that's fall leading into the national championship year in 89. And it was a fall meeting. It was the first meeting. And if you look at number one on there is clue about the rotation for the week. Number two, talk about the importance of schoolwork. Number three, talk about arm care. And what I was going to do is just all the hit list of things that are important in Wichita State and define Wichita State pitching. So I probably had 15 or 20 things. And normally when you have your little list and the meeting's over, you just throw it away. Well, for whatever reason, I said, no, that's going to be pertinent every year. I'm just going to keep it. And I'll just add. So over the years, I've added and now have 395 bullet points. So it started in the fall of 88 with the first meeting, and I just decided to keep it and add on.
Do you have two or three favorite lessons from the Brain?
There's so many, but yes. And kind of back and off from that, when we'd have these meetings, you know, I'd do the meat and potatoes stuff. I'd have three or four things that we needed to cover. And then I'd say, okay, let's just throw it out there. Give me a number. And like I say, it grew as years went on. But three of my favorites, I think one of them is confidence at the end. Every coach in the world talks about confidence. Okay, so that's standard. It's not like I'm breaking new ground there. But confidence at the end is right when you release the ball. And anybody that's been on their game will tell you, you release it with that little flip, that little confidence right at the end. And the ball like jumps right when it gets to the plate. And you can see it going there. You know it's going to get there. You can visualize it. And I use that all the time. When I retired from pitching coach and moved to development in 2016, Paul Miller, who's a household name for Wichita State basketball, Valley Player of the Year in 06, started out as a pitcher here. He was going to pitch and then decided to focus on basketball. But he called me and he said he thought of me every time he shot free throws. Same thing, that little flip right at the end, confidence at the end. So that was one of them. Let me be your experience. What that is say somebody's a freshman and you can see that, okay, this is a guy, he could win for us today. But he doesn't know that. He doesn't believe that. He doesn't have that confidence at this point. Well, you say, let me be your experience. I've been here 3 years, or I've been here 7 years, or I've been here 9 years. At the end, it was 38 years. And it helps as you go on because they know how many All-Americans you've had, first-rounders, big league guys. You can win right there. You got to trust me. Let me be your experience. And I used to call it speeding up your brain. In the fall, you can be a freshman. You're going to throw however many innings in the fall against Wichita State. So these are Division I innings against a legit team. So say you throw 29 innings. I say, all right, your freshman year, you do 29 innings. Now you pull back after the fall. You talk about things you need to work on. You have the winter months to process it. You come back in January, you're a sophomore. I call it speeding up the brain. But let me be your experience. And the other one was a fun one, Little League mentality. Any sport, well, anything in life, sometimes people overthink things. They get in their own brain. They can't just keep it simple. So I called it Little League mentality. I said, when you went and played games at 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, you were nervous. You're just getting to go play. And you weren't worried about a bad hop. You've never seen a good hop. So just go play the game. Put your glove on your handlebars of your bike. And I always used to joke and say you'd put your little Mickey Mantle rookie card in your spokes of your tire with clothespins. And you'd roll down the street and just go play. You knew where to play in the outfield because there was a bare spot there. And that's where you play defense. So just keep it simple like that. Little League mentality.
That's a very good Paul Miller anecdote. I remain angry at him that he didn't ever tell me that when he was playing basketball here at Wichita State. That would have been a fun story to write. Okay, so the brain is an essential part of another fun part about Brent Chemnitz's pitching coach, which is the flow meetings, the pre-practice pitchers meetings. You get guys in there, you're finding out how they're feeling, talking about what's going on. They bring you a drink, all that kind of routine. Any pitcher and most of the catchers, I think, they fondly remember the flow meetings. Was there a pitcher who really stood out as kind of a flow All-American, maybe asked good questions, was really always engaged, always attentive? Anybody jump out like that?
Well, and I brought this guy out this weekend. He probably is was the biggest influence with me to give me confidence, Don Heinkel. I'm 21 years old. I'm living in the dorm. I got dudes on the pitching staff who are older than I am. And Heinkel's a freshman, my first year here, so I'm like 3 or 4 years older. But he was a 4-point student, pre-med, doctor today, still the winningest pitcher in NCAA history, 51 wins. Like I say, played in the big leagues, but so respectful. And it just gave me confidence that, okay, there's a young guy. I'm a 21-year-old pitching coach, but he's just given me ultimate respect, and he's continued to do that. But he would be the first one, but I never felt a lack of respect in those meetings. People love those meetings. And you know what made me feel the best? The pitchers had to be there, okay? Position players did not have to be there. I used to have tons of position guys that said, hey, man, I need my brain freshened up. Can I set in? And the Andy Dirks of the world and guys like that. I had tons of position guys that would set in on my meetings. So then I was like, okay, this must be pretty entertaining. And I felt like I gave good information, but anybody that knows me at all knows that I'm always going to have a lighter side, mainly to amuse myself. But yeah, the position guys sitting in always made me feel like, okay, this is well received by everybody.
Definitely. A lot of Shockers have fond meetings of the flow meetings. How often did you go to the mound, certain you were going to get thrown out of the game, ejected at that point?
Well, my fair share. If somebody had been squeezed, my big deal was if you're right around the zone, you're getting squeezed, and that umpire has an attitude, I'm not going to last long. Because here's one of my deals is I would tell the pitchers and catchers, don't ever show up an umpire. On the mound, don't ever show an umpire up. Catcher, same thing. I said, I got it. If you need to be defended, I got your back. So those are the things that needed to happen. Got right around the zone, getting squeezed, and an umpire with an attitude. Because if a pitcher's everywhere, well, then I'm not going to defend him. Or if I go out there and they say, no, those are balls, they're close, but they're balls, well, then what am I going to say? Okay, so then I back off. But if they say, oh, yeah, he's getting squeezed. And then the final one, if you get an umpire that's maybe missing some and you got a guy that is throwing strikes, but he's like, man, hang with me. I'm struggling. I get it. I'd be frustrated too. It just gave me that. It calmed me down in a heartbeat. Kind of rattled me sometimes because sometimes I wanted to get tossed. But if they came with that attitude, I calmed down in a heartbeat. But if they came back at me like, we're not talking balls and strikes and get back in the hole or whatever, oh, I'm out. I'm done. And I knew it. So there was my fair share that I'd go out there and say, look, I'm going to get tossed. don't get caught up in my craziness. Right after I get tossed, worked at third to first, this hitter pounding him in, make sure and pound him in, whatever the case may be. But a lot of times I told him it was going to happen.
Which catchers did the best job with some soothing words for a struggling pitcher?
And our catchers, I always used to tell people, I always felt like I had a great relationship with the pitchers. But the catchers were my boys, because it's like you feel like they're an extension of you. We're figuring out what makes each guy click. We've had, what, six of our catchers catching the big leagues? So there was always a great rapport there. I'd say Wedge, because Wedge was great with everybody. Charlie O'Brien, as I mentioned earlier, best catcher, best receiver at any level ever. Charlie was great with the Sombergs and the Heinkels and the Elkers and the All-American guys. Charlie didn't have a lot of patience for guys that couldn't spot their fastball and got in their own heads. And that would kind of play out in the big leagues when he caught 13 Cy Young Award winners. Guys like Maddox wanted him. Clemens wanted him. He was amazing. But as far as the guy that connected with everybody, we had a lot of good ones. Doug Mirabelli was really good, but I'd say Wedge.
Eric Wedge, of course, catcher on the 89 College World Series champions, currently the Shocker coach. All right, let's take away 89 when the Shockers defeated Texas in Omaha. Well, give us a couple other victories that really stand out.
Well, for me, and I mentioned the three wins in New Orleans to get us to Omaha for the first time. Those are huge. But I've been asked many times, okay, this is probably a tough question. You know, everybody assumes that the 89 championship against Texas, which it is, it's one. But I'm telling you what, it's not as big a gap as you might think. Number two, going down to Oklahoma State in 1988, they had gone to the College World Series 7 years in a row. We ended their string. We went into their park, and we had swag, but obviously so they. So for us to go down there and beat them in their regional, to end their string of going to Omaha in 1988, that's a close two.
How far down the list do we have to go for the first matchup with Creighton in the 1991 College World Series?
Well, Jim Hendry's still a great friend today, and it was obvious late 80s that, okay, they hired the right guy. Jim Hendry, he can recruit, and I give him a hard time that he sped up the whole recruiting. Because in those days, in the 80s, you could go in your office in November in the winter and call guys in the fall, and they're like, oh, wow, you're already calling me? That's great. Well, I remember calling Scott Service, a kid from Wisconsin, in like November of his senior year in high school, and he had already committed to Creighton. And I'm like, what? Okay, I didn't say that, but I was thinking it. So this had been like 85, 86. Well, I see Henry at the national convention in Nashville that year, and we knew each other, but we really at that point weren't like really good friends. He laughed. He said, I had to beat the Shockers to him or whatever. And that was the start of an amazing friendship with Hendry. And to get on track here, in 91, even though we beat them eight straight times, that's unheard of, because that team was legit. That was one of the best offensive teams, if not the best offensive team I've ever seen. And we play them in Omaha. I think to this day, it might be the best game in ESPN history as far as, you know, ratings with TV. And then you got the Rosenblatt crowd who'd always loved us. And now all of a sudden it's 20,000 plus, obviously cheering for Creighton. So about the Creighton games would be up there.
Losses that still bother you.
Well, the finals always do. The 82 guys, I didn't realize, I probably should have, but that stings them. Guys like Charlie O'Brien, that they had that team, which was the best team, didn't win a national championship. So that still stings those guys. And then the 91-93 against LSU obviously sting. But 88, Arizona State, were one pitch away from going to the finals like however many times. And Ricky Candelaria keeps fouling pitches off and then loops one into the outfield and they tie it. We go into extra innings and lose, because if we win that game, we go into a winner-take-all game against Stanford with a fresh Greg Brummett. So we could have gone back to back there. And that one stings. That one stung for a lot of years.
One strikeout to win a game. And I'll remind you, you're no longer the pitching coach. All your guys are adults. They're grown up. They're out of college. So you can't go to the, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings that coaches love to go to in these situations. One strikeout to win a game. Who do you want on the mound?
Well, but let me check you there. These guys still have egos. These guys still will bring up stuff you said 30 years ago and you didn't remember saying it. So don't think that these competitive pitchers, if they hear this, won't get on me. There's two guys I'm going to bring up, and then I'm going to say my winner. Jim Newland, the year he had in 89, 5-0, 18 saves, 1.08. He was absolutely dominant, which a huge factor in us winning it. So you got to put him in there. Jamie Bluma, an amazing closer. He could just go in there and slam the door. So we had a lot of guys that fit that mold. We used Looper out of the pen. Obviously, Pelfrey's a starter, but just crazy stuff. But I got to go Darren Dreyfuss. I mean, you look at Darren Dreyfuss' stuff, and people just were in awe of the movement on his fastball, his breaking ball, just wipeout type stuff.
Who is a pitcher that maybe you were kind of iffy on recruiting, not sure at all, and then turned into a star?
Well, Jim Newland, when he came in here, it was a good story. I went to see David Haas pitch in Kansas City. He ended up being an All-American here. But I love to just bounce around the parks. So we had an afternoon game. So I finished, and it's like, okay, David Haas is a no-brainer. Well, I stopped by Johnson County 3-2 because I wanted to see Rodney Peete play. He was the same age, but he had signed to go to Southern Cal for football, and he just got all kinds of pub. And I said, I got a little time. I'm going to pop by and see Rodney Peete. Well, I go see him, and I go, okay, I see it. Just a crazy athlete. Well, on his team was a junior that was pitching. I go, I like this guy. So I started asking who his name was. And they said, Jim Newland. So I kind of registered in my brain and kind of had some dialogue going with him. And I go back to watch him as a senior, and he had turned into this train wreck delivery. And I'm like, what happened? Well, anyway, we still offer him because I did not forget what we saw the year before. And so it was a little bit, I know people that saw him that first fall were like, what were you thinking? Well, you know the rest. He turned out great. So he'd be one. And then the other guy that was, and he reminds me all the time, he was not on our A-list, Braden Looper. Braden Looper came to my pitching camp his sophomore and junior year, and I liked him, but we ended up signing a guy from Girard, Kansas, Dan Smith. Well, Dan Smith ends up signing pro. I think he's a 7th, 8th round draft, signed with the Texas Rangers. So like so many years, then all of a sudden you're scrambling, you're starting over. So I'd remembered Looper because Smith signed right away, fortunately. So I go down, I run down Looper in Woodward, and he had made a jump, and I'm thinking in my own head, what were we thinking? Not offering him right away. Well, we offer him and then get him. And he reminded me many times that he was that next tier, and obviously Looper was great, turned out great.
Who was the lowest maintenance great pitcher at Wichita State?
Wow. We've had so many low maintenance. Heichel's definitely in that conversation. The other two that pop into my head immediately are Jordan Cooper. He was an All-American, Topeka kid, just a dance, just striped over, took care of business in school. I used to say, hey, don't let a note end up on my desk about you not going to class or whatever. Well, Jordan Cooper was a model student, model pitcher, everything. But the guy that I probably would go with, and those two are both worthy of this, Kenny Stanstra. Small town, Missouri. He still may be the winningest high school pitcher ever. But just pitchability, great student, great teammate. Everything. So I'm going to go with Kenny Stienstra.
Kenny Stienstra was on those early 90 teams. Jordan Cooper, what, about 2009-10, kind of in that era of Shocker baseball. You know who one of my favorite ones that I covered when I worked for the Wichita Eagle? Aaron Schaefer.
Oh, yes. Thank you. You just picked me up, yeah. Because I would have been walking out going, oh, no way I didn't mention Schaefer. Schaefer was another guy, small town Missouri guy. And just pitch, great baseball genes in the family. But pitchability, gamer, check all the boxes. So he would definitely be in that conversation.
Always enjoyed him. He had a great way of explaining the game or what happened to people so that they could kind of understand it, and it was interesting. I always enjoyed him. Highest maintenance great pitcher at Wichita State.
Jim Newlin, easy, no-brainer. And I hope he's listening because we laugh about that so much, and he does too. He's got an amazing sense of humor, and he put together the most dominant bullpen year, like I said. He's the only guy in the program I can throw out his numbers. 5-0, 18 saves, 1.08 ERA, but he was high maintenance. Me and Wedge double-teamed him his junior year as far as working his brain, and we laugh and go, well, it was worth it, but he was work.
Opposing hitter who scared you the most?
Well, I hate to use the word scared, but every time he came up there, it was like, ugh, Pete Incaviglia. Steve Hacker had a year at Missouri State, which was insane. And in those years, it was Southwest Missouri. They played in this tiny park called Meter Park. And you can throw Ryan Howard into that equation. And we used to go play them, and it was like a little teeny park. And I'm thinking, you could put these guys in Yellowstone, and they can still hit. They don't need the benefits of that park. But so those guys would pop into my head. And Oklahoma State had so many amazing hitters. But Incaviglia, as strong as he was, it was insane. You could jam him, and he could hit it out of the park. So I'd have to give it to Pete Incaviglia.
Who was a regular opponent, maybe a Valley opponent, maybe somebody played, you know, every year in the midweek that you really respected from the standpoint you knew they were going to be prepared. Maybe they weren't as talented, but they didn't make mistakes, and you knew you really had to play well to defeat them.
Well, I have my answer, but I'm going to give some love to a couple people up front. It seemed like Creighton always was well prepared, always had good teams and different type teams over the years. The Jim Hendry years, amazing offensive teams, and his pitching coach, Todd Wimberg, still a great friend, did a good job with the pitching staff. So those teams were dominant. And then, you know, you get into the Valley years, it kind of varied. Some years it was Indiana State, Missouri State, Southwest Missouri was always in the equation. But it's a no-brainer for me. The biggest, best rivalry, and as pitching coach, the one that you had circled on your calendar, Oklahoma State. I love Gary Ward, total respect, great hitting coach. And I've become really good friends with his longtime hitting coach, who is also at LSU, Jim Schwanke, because Willie works for us and pitched for us. So me and Jim have become really good friends, but those guys, inch off the plate, they'd take it. They'd take it deep in the count. Great competitive guys, talented, and were intense games and just great for neighborhood rivalries, but definitely Oklahoma State.
So the second act of your career has been in development, fundraising for Wichita State Athletics. It's probably not an area that has gotten a lot of publicity, but I think it's been really important from the standpoint of keeping the baseball family together during the coaching transitions, fundraising for the improvements, the locker room, and so forth over at X Stadium. Why has that been rewarding for you?
Well, it's just so fun to be able to stay at the school where you built these relationships, pitching coach for 38 years, and you know people. You know a few of them really well, but a lot of them you know to say hello, you see them at games, but you don't really become really good friends with them. Well, this has allowed me to get to know people on a real personal level. I travel with basketball. We take donors. We got a basketball game on given nights, and we'll all bounce around and take laps around the concourse and just say hello to people. At baseball games, you know, go through the skyboxes, maybe go out on the hill, and somebody may have, you know, one of the answers. Everybody's a coach. And my standard answer is, well, I'm a lot smarter up here than I was in the dugout. But it's just fun getting to know them. A lot less stress. I mean, yes, we need to raise money. I help with the auctions. A lot of times I MC them. But just getting to know people and on a more personal level. And I always tell them the same thing. If they want to hear baseball stories, I can tell them with the best of them, but I like hearing their story. Okay, when did you know? You know, like Frank and Dan Carney, they probably told me the pizza story 50 times. But, you know, that's one that's, you know, well documented. But there's a lot of those other people in Wichita that have been very successful that I've gotten to know. You're around them. You want to hear what they have to say. And you'd be stunned how many times those lessons translate to sports and just life in general. So I'm having a blast.
Did you, when you were selling Wichita State football tickets for former athletic director Ted Bradyhoff back in the late 70s, did you have any inkling that could kind of come around full circle for you?
Well, Paul, I could always sell. Cub Scout Carnival tickets when I was 7, 8 years old, I could sell. Junior high, when I was in junior high, I sold the most Perry High School football tickets. So sales has always been something that, the gift of gab, I guess. But to think that, okay, this is going to translate into what I do now, obviously, maybe I should have seen that. Because I did sell almost 500. That was the summer of 1980. And Ted Bradyhoff, after that summer, he was blown away that I sold that many. And he said, I don't know if you can coach a lick, but I'll give you a job right now in marketing. Well, coaching was my deal. And, it was a great 38-year run. But as I look back, you know, your initial question is, okay, if it doesn't work out here, what do you do? And I said, well, probably high school coach. And I think that would have been a fun thing if it happened. But 2020 hindsight, I think this is my niche. And it's in sports, which is fun. You feel like every day you're not going to work. It's something you just love and are passionate about. But I think I would have had a blast in any kind of sales, and I think I'd have been successful.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos. No good. 1 second. It's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.